Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yesterday, we were in the midst of a really revolting story by a complete idiot at Reuters trying to present the growing calamity that exists within the Islamic communities in Israel. Even in the news here with Salem Radio Network's news, you notice that the bombings that took place in Gaza were done by Fatah, not done by Israel, against the head of Hamas. Now, it isn't that, as the SRN News said, that there is a relationship between Fatah and the Palestinian Authority. They're one and the same. The PLO and Fatah are the same organization. And the Palestinian Authority is America's name for that organization. So Yasser Arafat's PLO had two wings. There was the terrorist wing and the political wing, run by the same group of fellas with the exact same agenda, same charter. And collectively, America decided that it would pretty that up and call it the Palestinian Authority. Now, it's not that the Fatah PLO movement lost control of just Gaza. They lost control of everything. They, in the only free vote taken of Muslims in the West Bank and Gaza, 70% of the Muslims voted for Hamas. And so when Abbas became president of the West Bank, it was strictly because he negated the election. He was not elected. If he were to stand for election in the West Bank today, he'd lose overwhelmingly by more than 2/3 vote. Because while Fatah and the PLO are fundamentalist Islamic organizations, Hamas is even more fundamentalist. And 2/3 of Muslims, when given the opportunity to vote, vote for the most extreme, the most fundamentalist, the most Salaf version of Islam. So, our application of Islam, I should probably say. So that's really what is at stake here, is that there's not a moderate group and a Islamic terrorist group, with the Islamic terrorist group being Hamas and the moderate group being Fatah. They're one and the same. They're both fundamentalist Islamic organizations, and it's strictly a PLO versus Hamas, just as there has always been that conflict. You know, and particularly in Israel, there were 7 or 8 very effective terrorist organizations all simultaneously. Hezbollah, Hamas, Aska Martyrs Brigade, Islamic Jihad, the PLO, Fatah, Hamas. You know, just as if you search the web now, you'll find hundreds, if not thousands, of Islamic terrorist organizations. They go by many names, but at the foundation, at the core of all of them, is the same religion, the same wannabe prophet, the same wannabe God, the same book. It's all Islamic. Now, this article was talking about the unrest taking place in Al-Thuri, which it said it quickly became inflamed after Hijazi's killing. Now, for this journalist to write that shows that they're incapable of rational thought. I mean, you can't write that without quantifying it, without adding a moral line for perspective. Hijazi was killed because he tried to kill a Jew who was attending a conference in cold blood. And then when the Jews came to arrest him, he shot at them And in the midst of a gunfight, he was killed. So he's not a hero. He's not somebody that you would become inflamed because he was killed. He chose to kill not once but twice in the same day and was killed in the process. And yet these polluted, corrupted, diseased Muslim young men and boys somehow, with having lost touch with reality, responded by throwing rocks, lighting fires, tossing improvised explosive device and Molotov cocktails at Israeli police, promising revenge. Revenge for what? For killing somebody that's trying to kill you? And the Israelis responded with stun grenades and tear gas as opposed to bullets, even though Hajjazi wasn't shooting stun grenades. He wasn't firing tear gas. He was firing real bullets. And then they said, let him arrest us, let him shoot at us, it doesn't matter. This is a quote from Hamada Abu Ammar, a 21-year-old Muslim boy. And it doesn't matter. He has nothing to live for. And he has nothing to live for, not because of Israel. If he was integrated within Israel, he would have a wonderful opportunity for an education, for economic prosperity, for freedom. He would have all of those things and a reason to live if he was integrated into Israel. But no, he's diseased and plagued by Islam. And so he has nothing to live for, only something to die for. Enslaving him would mean nothing to him. He's already a slave to Allah. You know, imprisoning him would mean nothing. It wouldn't change anything. He's already submitted. This is the reality of it. He's wearing the checkered scarf that was associated with the most ruthless terrorist the world had ever known, Yasser Arafat. At least we can frustrate them. They see, you know, we want to terrorize them. Slow them down. Show them that we will never give up. You've already lost. You look at your history. It's miserable. It's despicable. Everything Islam touches dies, decays, corrodes. And this article says if there's a war underway, then its driving force has become the ancient marble and stone compound that houses the Aqsa Mosque, and which is Islam's third holiest site, which is not true, and the 7th century Dome of the Rock, the Gold Plain Shrine, where the Prophet Muhammad is said to have ascended to heaven, which is also not true. There is nothing holy about the Aqsa Mosque. Nothing. There is nothing holy about the Dome of the Rock. Both buildings exist on the Temple Mount because Muslims, enraged by Muhammad, converted to terrorists by Muhammad, rode out of Arabia to bludgeon the world. And one of the places they encountered along the way was a depopulated Israel. It had been depopulated 500 years earlier by the Romans. And when they came to the Temple Mount, the first thing they did is built a trophy on top of it. That's the Dome of the Rock. It is an Islamic trophy saying, we conquered this. Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater than Yahweh. It's the tangible expression of Allahu Akbar, a great scar on the most important place in the world. And the notion that Muhammad ascended to heaven there, let's just suppose for a moment, let's take the same flight of fancy and suppose that it's true. If it is true, then the only way you can get to heaven is through Jerusalem. that Muhammad, who claimed that Allah lived in Mecca and the black stone of the Kaaba, that he demonstrated that you can't get to heaven from Mecca. You can't get to heaven from Medina. You want to get to heaven, you've got to go through Jerusalem. Oops. Well, that sure as a hell throws a monkey wrench into everything Islam touts. But, of course, it's not true. The eyewitness accounts of Muhammad that night was his child wife, Aisha, who said that the 53-year-old prophet who was molesting a 9-year-old girl never moved that night. That's the reality of the whole thing. Never moved. Didn't so much as wiggle. And so his claim to have ridden a winged ass from Mecca to Jerusalem is a complete and utter farce. And when people lie about such things, they ought not be trusted with the other things they say. And adding insult to injury, he claims that when he got to Jerusalem on his winged ass, that he met with all of the bigwigs of the prophets of the chosen people, all of which spoke for Yahweh, not Allah. And on top of that, he claims that he met with them in the temple, too stupid to know that it had been destroyed over 500 years earlier. It had not been rebuilt. Just one stupid, ignorant, moronic lie after another by easily the most idiotic man ever to claim to have spoken for God. He was nothing but a liar. And so this very claim that Jerusalem is a holy spot by Islam, when one looks at the evidence presented by Muhammad and his companions, is to completely discredit Islam. Islam falls apart with its lust to put trophies on the Temple Mount. It is its Achilles heel. The realization that it is nothing more than a braggadocious lie. The deeper one digs into the annals of Muhammad's mythical ride on the imaginary winged ass in his night's journey from Mecca to Jerusalem to meet in a non-existent temple with the long-dead Jewish prophets, it gets even worse. And that's because Muhammad provided hadith, oral reports, that detailed his experience upon meeting with the Jewish prophets, all of which was moronic. And then what happens once he leapt up from the temple and journeyed to heaven. You see, the first stop between earth and heaven was actually hell. So in the Islamic world, hell is up. Hell is where Allah spends all of his time, according to the Quran. Muhammad's testimony about what he experienced in hell was women hanging by their breasts, women being tortured. He told all who would listen as often as they would ask that the majority of hell's inhabitants were women, and they were there because they were ungrateful to their husbands. They didn't satisfy their husbands sufficiently. Now, then there were seven different heavens, and Muhammad associated Isa, which is the Arabic for Esau, which has been changed to Jesus to make it look like Jesus was an Islamic prophet. But there is no mention of a Jesus in the Quran. It's Esau. That Esau, the Quranic Jesus, was in the lowest of the heavens. Because Muhammad, his place is in the highest of the heavens. Allahu Akbar, after all. And as he made his way up, you know, the next on the food chain was Moshe. And, you know, it goes up from there. And you get finally to folks like Noah that he claims that he found along the way. He's just pulling names out of the Talmud as it was recited to him. Just stupid. Then, you know, he gets to heaven, and Allah wants mankind, when he asks Allah, so what do you want? It's not to be known. It's not even to be worshipped. It's not to be loved. It's not to engage in a relationship. No, what Allah wants is to be mooned 50 times a day. That's what Allah wants. He wants to be mooned. He wants the Islamic prostration prayer, which isn't a prayer. There's no conversation to God. It's a bunch of mumbling where one moons God and puts their head down into the dirt in submission. That he wants to be mooned 50 times a day. And Muhammad says, oh, my God, you know, that was tried with other people. And you know, they couldn't bear it. And my people can't bear it either. Oh, Allah, can I negotiate on behalf of the Muslims? And he negotiated according to the Quran 5 times a day that Muslims would pray. And yet they pray 3 times a day because that's what's in the hadith and that's what Muhammad did. Every aspect of it, including the stories that Muhammad told of what happened to him in each of these places, shows that Islam is nothing more than an egotistical man pretending to be inspired by God in an audience of ignoramuses. And that the only reason the ignoramuses believed him is because he engaged in acts of terrorism, justifying those acts of terrorism, telling the terrorists that in this life they got to keep all they could steal. They could rape their victims. They could enslave their victims. And that in the next life, should they be killed, that Allah was going to give them multiple virgins to rape throughout time. It was just repulsive. And it remains repulsive. And so had this Reuters journalist bothered to read the stories of the justification for putting that hideous-looking gold trophy on top of the Temple Mount, he or she would have known the truth. He or she could have said something that would be valuable. He or she could have made a difference in the world. He or she could have been right, could have been responsible, could have been a journalist. But no. All we get is rubbish. No wonder so many people remain ignorant and lost. A writer, who is obviously not a journalist, continues by saying, since Israel captured East Jerusalem from Jordan during the 1967 Middle East War and annexed it in a move not recognized internationally, Jews have been allowed to visit the site they revere as the Temple Mount, but forbidden to pray there. And again, this nincompoop can't figure it out. Well, first of all, Israel recaptured. Israel, Jerusalem, was the capital of Judea, which was the capital of Israel, since 1000 BCE. 1000 BCE. The Promised Land became the Promised Land in 2000 BCE. 4,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago, David established the capital there in Jerusalem and built it. It was the capital of Judea. So when you're talking about Israel capturing Jerusalem. They're recapturing, they're reclaiming their capital. But no, this journalist can't write that. Second of all, they didn't take it from the mythical people known as the Palestinians. It wasn't the capital of Palestine. No, you see, the West Bank was controlled by Jordan. There was no two-party, two-state solution then. In fact, Gaza was part of Egypt. There was no two-state solution. Israel did not capture, did not occupy Palestine. Period. The West Bank was part of Jordan. Did the Jordanians give independence to the Muslims living there who have now claimed to be Palestinians? No. Did they call them Palestinians? No. Did they give them any autonomy? No. Did they have the right to vote? No. Was it an independent state? No. Did they have the right to bear arms? No. Was there any attempt to unify the West Bank with Gaza? No. Did Egypt grant independence to Gaza? No. Was Gaza an independent state? No. Did the Gazans get to vote for their leader? No. Did the Egyptians allow the Muslims in Gaza to keep and bear arms? No. And so this idea that Israel somehow is occupying land that was part of somebody else's country is absolutely ludicrous. Or that the Palestinians are a people group that have a country named Palestine that is somehow occupied by Jews. It is absurd. And this person was smart enough to research the fact that Jerusalem was part of Jordan until 1967, but can't figure out the rest of it from there. It was not the Middle East War. It was the Six-Day War. And it's called the Six-Day War because it took Jews all of 6 days to completely eradicate Team Islam. Muslim nations, led by Egypt and by Syria, collectively decided that they could eradicate Israel. And in 1967, they joined together with the express purpose of bludgeoning Israel, of conquering it. And you had Jordan, who played a major role in the conquest of Israel. They didn't want to retain the West Bank. They weren't there to retain Gaza. Gaza and the West Bank weren't occupied. They weren't trying to establish a new state. Egypt, and Jordan, and Syria, and Team Islam at large were trying to obliterate Israel. And they lost. They outmanned Israel over 100-1. They outgunned Israel over 100-1. And they lost. And as Israel began to push the Muslim attackers back, they pushed them back all the way out of the Sinai and to the borders of Cairo, and would have taken over Cairo had the United States not stepped in and said, don't do that. They pushed them back out of the West Bank and deep into Jordan, all the way to the suburbs of Damascus, and would have captured Damascus. There would have been no Assad regime, no mass murder of so many people, had Israel been allowed to capture Damascus. But no, the United States would have none of it. Israel moved well up into Lebanon, but the United States forced them to retreat. And Israel was whole again. Judea and Samaria were once again a part of Israel. But unfortunately, Moshe Dayan, which was one of the generals at that time, gave control of the Temple Mount to the Muslims. And he did it because he was an atheist and he did not like the Jewish religion. I don't much like the Jewish religion either. And he also recognized that many rabbinic Jews didn't engage in the defense of their country. That even to this day, those repulsive people wearing the black hats and little curly cue hair that bob all day and act religious in Jerusalem, the fundamentalist ultra-Orthodox Jews, they don't engage in the defense of their country. They don't pay tax. They're paid by the Israeli government to be religious all day. They're scum. Moshe Dayan had despised them, which is why he precluded the Temple Mount from falling under their control. When Muslims were given control of the Temple Mount, the first thing they said is no Jew can pray there. Now, talk about stupid. Now, if you were a journalist and you were, you know, let's all get along, let's all coexist, let's all be supportive and tolerant of one another. When you read that no Jew can pray there, why would you write that and just leave it dangling and say, well, that's pretty absurd? That's clearly wrong. That ought not be. You can't do it? Why can't you do it? Now, I realize that a rabbinic Jew praying to Hashem or G-D or their Lord is a prayer not heard by God. I realize that God has nothing to do with those who would go to the Temple Mount and pray to a nameless God, a nameless Lord, no matter the religion. But by the same token, since God is not into submission, he wants all of us to have the opportunity to make that choice. And the fact that that choice is being precluded is something even God would oppose. But apparently, not the journalist for Reuters. Forbidden to pray there. And by the way, they're actually all but forbidden to be there. When I went to Israel, the first place I wanted to go was the Temple Mount. I was told I could not go there. That is a source of frustration to many since the site is the holiest place in Judaism. That is no longer true. It's not even remotely true. It once was. It isn't anymore. The purpose of the Babylonian Talmud, the direction in which rabbinic Judaism has gone, and this really begins in earnest with the father of rabbinic Judaism, Rabbi Akiva, is to disassociate the Temple and Temple Mount and Torah and Yahweh from the religion. Since the Romans destroyed the Temple to Yahweh in 70 CE, and Rabbi Akiva was at the height of his power in 133 CE, creating rabbinic Judaism. That at that time, since there was no temple, the temple could not be central to the religion, and it isn't. Everything the Torah says that is supposed to be done in the tabernacle and the temple has been written out of the religion. Yahweh's name has been written out of the religion. And the Talmud exists to replace and to interpret the Torah. So, rabbinic Judaism, if you actually understand the religion as it exists in the Talmud, as it is lived today, the temple plays absolutely no role in it. Absolutely no role. It's not just that it's the holiest place in Judaism. Today, Judaism is simply rabbinic Judaism. It's the only surviving form of the religion. Pharisaic, rabbinic Judaism. It's the only surviving form of the religion, and it does not have the Temple Mount as important, nor even the temple as important. Everything that was designed to be done at the temple has no place in Judaism today. That's not even Yahweh's temple. They don't want to even mention his name. So that's how erroneous this individual is. And matter of fact, in today's Israel, the Shahs, the most fundamentalist halak Jews that are religious zealots and fundamentalists, they are wholly opposed to rebuilding the temple. The temple faithful are not rabbinic Jews. They're a tiny, tiny minority in Israel. Tiny, tiny minority. A tiny fraction of 1%. And the ultra-Orthodox religious Jews, the Pharisaic Jews, represent about 20% of the country. That 20% is wholly opposed to rebuilding the temple. They don't want it. And so this statement by this supposed journalist is just filled with a pile of lies and misstatements. It's not the holiest place in Judaism. Period. And it says where two ancient Jewish temples once stood. The temples weren't Jewish. And two never stood there. We'll be back. This article then continues with, in recent months, a campaign for the prayer ban to be overturned, led by Yehuda Glick and other settler activists, has gathered momentum, raising alarm among Palestinians and Muslims. Now, why would you say Palestinians and Muslims? There once was a time when Christians, Jews, and Muslims existed in what is today Israel. But the Muslims are intolerant. And now the number of Christians that live amongst the Muslims, which was at one time about 20%, is now less than 2. There's been a 90% decline. And so today, 90% of those who would call themselves Palestinians, even though there is no such beast, are Muslims. So why differentiate between them? And they're the ones that impose the prayer ban. It's their intolerance. And the idea that you can't pray, you know, I understand that that like in classrooms where the liberal establishment doesn't want orchestrated prayer. I don't want orchestrated prayer too, either. I think orchestrated group prayer is a horribly bad idea. I think it's just stupid. Even Yosha said it's stupid. It's the act of a hypocrite. It's being done to be seen, to be heard. It has nothing to do with communication with God. And so a group prayer in school, which Christians want in America, is absolutely asinine. Pisses God off. Ought not be doing it. And to have a, you know, group prayers of any kind. And, you know, here on the Temple Mount, Muslims do their group prayer. Orchestrated group prayer 3 times a day. They're prostrating themselves to their wannabe God. But to ban somebody wanting to go up there and pray, yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Muslims look stupid in this regard. Let's just say it the way it is. Rather than being mad at Jews for building houses, we ought to be angry at Muslims for saying, nope, you can't come to the most important place on earth associated with God and converse with him. I mean, that is absurdly ridiculous. And we ought to, as sane people, say, no, we're not going to tolerate that. You know, what we need is to disassociate Islam from running the Temple Mount. That's what a sane, moral individual would do. And the Muslims are further afield who fear that the Islamic oversight of the compound that has existed since the Crusades is threatened. Actually, it happened well before the Crusades. I mean, this notion that Muslims came to control the Temple Mount because of the Crusades is craziness. I mean, the Crusades, took place around 1000 BCE. Yeah, there was four or five variations, and they go a little earlier and a little later than that, but they're clustered right around 1000 BCE. The Muslim conquest of Judea and Sumeria, as well as northern Africa and India and most of the Middle East, occurred right around between 720 to 820 CE. So this occurred between 100 to 300 years before the Crusades. Once again, wrong. And let's just say the author was right. Let's say that because the Muslims were more vicious than the Christians during the Crusades, and the Muslims prevailed in preventing the Byzantines from returning to Israel and Christians from returning. Because remember that after what the Western Roman Empire fell, and the province of Yehuda was incorporated into the Byzantine or Eastern Roman Empire. And so the Byzantines were in control of Yehuda, of Israel, before the Muslims came and attacked it. The Muslims were there, and the Crusades followed because the Muslims had been the aggressors. Let's tell the story. Put it in context. Let people understand what has occurred.